Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with action and in truth. 1 John 3:18 is one of my favorite verses, and it's an important verse in the life of today's guest. I'm your host, Sandra Flack. Thank you for joining us for episode 242 of the Orphans No More podcast. Before we get started, I want to tell you about an amazing video we produced featuring the work of Justice for Orphans and the local impact we have through our Care Portal platform. It's just a 5-minute clip, but it's so inspiring, and I'm hoping you'll check it out. Just go to our website, justicefororphansny.org, and click on the Care Portal tab at the top of our homepage. The video is at the very top of that page, and if you watch and really like that one, scroll to the bottom of the page, and there is an 8-minute video that was produced by a well-known sports channel, and that video features Care Portal and our partnership with Liberty University's football program, and you'll get an amazing glimpse into the work of Care Portal and the work of Justice for Orphans and all that we are doing. So I hope you will check it out, and if you do, please let me know. Now, I also love hearing from you, so contact us via our social media at Justice for Orphans and our website, justicefororphansny.org, and you can also email me at sandraflackjfo@gmail.com. This week, I'm so thrilled to be talking with foster and adoptive mom and founder and executive director of Foster Love Project, Kelly Hughes. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Thank you, Sandra. So happy to be here.
Well, I'm excited because you are in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, not too far from where I am in upstate New York. So I just love to be able to chat with folks on the East Coast. So many times it's folks either down south in the Bible Belt or out west or Midwest somewhere. So I love it when there's, you know, sort of that fellow, you know, I don't know if you guys are considered Northeast or New England or...
Yeah, we are considered in the northeast corner.
There you go. So,
yeah,
we're buddies in the same location. Right. So I love to be able to talk with folks who are in this, you know, share the same heart, doing the same kind of stuff, in the same, you know, neck of the woods in the United States. So I'm grateful that you are with us today, and I know that you are you and your husband Andrew are parents to two biological children, a girl and a boy, but you also became foster parents. So what led you to take the plunge into fostering?
We really wanted a way to come alongside families in our city, and we're looking for tangible ways to help in that capacity. We really didn't know much about foster care, but we had some friends who began fostering, and so began talking with them about it and learning more. And as we studied it and looked into the needs in our city, we really felt like that was the right fit for our family.
Wow. I love that. And it definitely is a way to really have an impact, to work with families and work with those in crisis in our communities. What year did you begin fostering? How long ago?
2013 is when we began fostering, and we fostered 3 different sibling groups in that first year. So it was a trial by fire and just, you know, staying short amount of time, longer amount of time. So that was probably one of the most challenging years of our life, but also a year that God really not only changed us, but changed the trajectory of our life for the future.
Wow. So that was about 7 years ago. And I looked up some stats, and I know Pennsylvania has approximately 15,000 children in foster care. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah.
So there's a great need there and in every state, my state as well. So how many children in that 7 years, I know you mentioned sibling groups, how many altogether do you recall?
We have fostered 8, and then 2 of them ended up staying with our family permanently, and we did adopt them.
Wow, so you adopted 2. Mm-hmm. How old were they when they first came into your family, when they first came in as foster children?
They arrived to us just before they turned 1 and 2. So very little. They were with us for 1 year, and then they moved to live with some family in another state, and that didn't end up being the right fit for them, and so they came back to our family, and then we went through the adoption process. So that was a heavy time, you know, and people always talk about the hard parts of saying goodbye. And that, you know, when you've parented children for a year and they only know you as mom and dad at that point, it's really heavy to walk through that process. But I just always continually encourage foster parents and potential foster parents that God will walk you through that pain, and He is with you each step of the way. And I think it's so important that we focus on what happens to kids when there aren't homes available. Mm-hmm. And to me, I know that God can walk me through that pain if the end result is to say goodbye, and knowing that God loves and cares for those children more than I do. And so we focus on doing what we can do when we can do it and are given the opportunity. And I think it's really important to do that. And knowing that God's grace is just there through the whole process.
So you had babies come to you, stay 1 year, and then you had to let them go. And that's such a devastating experience. And we hear oftentimes families, people say they could never foster because they wouldn't be able to let go. But you've walked through that and you touched on something, because as hard as it is for us to let go, imagine how much more traumatizing it is to the child to have been with one family for 1 year as a baby and not know anyone else, and then have to be taken away and given, you know, placed someplace else, even though they were relatives. And then in this case, they came back to you. So, this is really more about the pain of the children than what we would endure as foster parents.
Right. Yeah. We really, I think as an adult, have, you know, we have the capacity to heal, and we have the capacity to go through hard things. And I think we need to be careful not to use that as an excuse, not to do hard things that God may call us to.
Yeah. So how has becoming a foster parent impacted you? What impact has it had on your life? Because you mentioned that it did, it changed your life.
Mm-hmm. It has given me greater compassion and empathy for adults that struggle with a variety of things, whether it be mental health challenges or addiction, poverty. Thankfully, by God's grace, I have not had to walk through those things. And it really can be easy for us to be callous towards people that have those struggles or challenges. Mm-hmm. And when you are meeting them face to face and you're seeing the pain in their own faces and the pain of their children not being able to be with you, it really changed my heart in what foster care can and should look like. And just from the beginning, I was really just struck with, how can I support these parents, and how can I give them the confidence that their kids are in a safe home and they're being cared for. But our goal is not to take your children away from you. Our goal is to be a part of your support system. And our whole end goal is for your family to be reunified. And I think that's so important for anybody that enters foster care, is to be 100% focused on how they can be a support to that family, and how they can help support that reunification process. It's difficult, because once we get attached to the children, it's really hard to be unbiased in that process, and it's really easy to nitpick what the birth parents and, you know, the list, oh, they didn't do this, and they didn't do this, and they didn't do this. And I think it's just so important that we continually check our own privilege of what our life circumstances have been against theirs, and also understanding of how they might view life differently because of their life circumstances, whether it's generational poverty or addiction or, you know, a variety of challenges. And so it really changed my perspective on how we can help these families in a greater way. And then, you know, of course, in a big way, foster love grew out of that. And that's changed so much in my life too. And I know we'll get into that. So yeah, foster care has been extremely life-changing for me.
Yeah. And you were generational. And one of the things I was thinking is, do you find that it's often cyclical? Like you're working, you get children placed in your home. You do have a connection with the biological family because there's often visits and whatnot. But do you find that often the bio parent probably was in foster care themselves or came out of a very difficult childhood, a very traumatic childhood, and that would explain why they have some deficits in their ability to parent and the systemic poverty and all those things?
Yeah, I don't know that any of our kids' parents were in foster care themselves, but I'm not sure that for sure. But I know they all experienced generational poverty, and just the difference it is to grow up and walk through life without a support system. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard for a lot of us to imagine what that might be like, to not have anybody that you can call, that no one around you has any margin to give. And everybody's in survival mode, just trying to pay that next bill, trying to keep a roof over their head, trying to keep food on the table. And for all of the parents, I think, of our kids, that has probably been the number one factor that all of them experienced. And so what that looks like is, in our country, you know, it's not as easy as pulling yourself up by your bootstraps or, you know, just getting luckier, getting that next opportunity. For many people, those opportunities just don't come. And if they do come because of their own life and trauma, they're not always able to make the right decisions in how to make that next step. And so creating resources and programs that can help those parents with life skills and parenting skills and many things that they just haven't had the opportunity to learn and grow in.
Yeah, those supports that you know, the church can provide even, and we'll get into some of that. Kelly, what's something that maybe surprised you as a foster parent, something that you learned along the way that was sort of eye-opening?
I think one of the biggest things that I wasn't expecting was the way the treatment of the birth family from all the people involved, the court system, the caseworkers. My goal from the beginning was always to build bridges of support with the parents, and caseworkers I worked with were shocked. They were like, what, you know, this doesn't happen. Like, people don't do this. What do you mean you want an address in prison so you can send some baby photos? And I'm like, this mom is missing her child's first month of life. Like, why wouldn't I want to share these photos with her? And so there just was often a spirit of treating these families with less than dignity. And so that's something, even that I'm working with local agencies and in continuing that conversation of how do we treat these families with dignity that they need and deserve, and not putting them down, and not being another person in their life that's kind of piling on them, but being an arm of their support.
But that stigma that bio parents, that birth parents, you know, that they're bad in some way, and it sounds like you've connected with the birth parents of the children that have been placed into your home. So how have you navigated those relationships? Because I'm sure it's sort of like, it's a little tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a real learning process, and I've done different things, from either just writing notes to update some of the parents I met in person, some of them I didn't. So some of them I would just write a note, send it to the visit, you know, like, here's something they did this week, or here's a milestone they accomplished. I can say without a doubt that all 8 children that were in our home, their parents loved them. And we knew that, and we could feel that. There's a lot of stigma around foster care, and sometimes all you hear is the horrible stories, you know, child found tied up in the basement, or, you know, some of these like just awful, awful stories. But it's important to remember that that's a very, very small percentage of kids that are going into foster care are those kind of extreme situations, that a majority of foster kids in foster care are because either mental health, addiction, or poverty. Those are really the 3 main factors. And those are all things that we can work through and overcome with our parents. You know, there's a lot of fear sometimes in the side of foster parents. I hear a lot, you know, it's not safe to have visits, or it's not safe for our kids. And that can be the case in some situations. But I have a dear friend that she always said, is it unsafe or is it uncomfortable? And I think that's such an important question for us to ask ourselves, because it's 100% uncomfortable. But that doesn't mean it's unsafe. At least in Pennsylvania, we have access to mediators who we can set up, you know, a mediator in a kid's play area, or we can go to a park. And, you know, most parents can meet in a public place, and it's not a safety factor. It might be uncomfortable, and the longer you do it and the more you do it, it just gets easier and better to navigate. And, you know, and something like we found with some of our kids' parents is that maybe they weren't in the place where they had so much they were dealing with, that yes, sometimes they skipped visits and those things didn't happen, and they had so much, there's so much put on them when their kids are in foster care. They're given this case plan, and they have all these appointments, and it's very, very overwhelming. And I think we just have to have so much compassion for that, of what they're experiencing, at the same time being separated from their children. And so, you know, for us, sometimes the parents wouldn't be checking in, but what we were able to do is connect with some extended relatives. And so we were able to connect with a grandma, and then we were able to connect with an auntie. And it was really, really neat to see how we would just try to take little intentional steps in any way that we could stay connected with their biological family. And so for our kids then who are adopted, it was a process. It probably took a couple years before we were at the place we're at now, which is incredible place of openness with their whole family. We go to family gatherings, we're invited to family get-togethers. It's really just a beautiful thing, and we love their extended family so much. But it wasn't a slow process, and it wasn't an easy process. We just had to keep taking little steps as those doors opened, and then gradually it just it became you know, the complete family. And to see the peace in my kids' lives, to know that they have full access to their biological family and to their history and to their culture, is so important to them. And we always reiterate to them that you have 2 families that love you, and you have 2 families to love. It's not a competition. We're not against each other. We're all part of your team. We're all part of your circle, and we're all here fighting for you. And I think it's really important for kids with two families to grow up in that way, if at all possible.
I love that. They have a team behind them and surrounding them, actually. And Kelly, I love your heart to minister to not just the child or the children, but to the parents. And like you've mentioned, poverty is really one of the number one, poverty, addiction, things like that. It's a very small percentage is abuse. But it's by and large these other issues, which with some support and some connection where they don't feel isolated, like they have to go this alone, it can make all the difference in the world, because they all love their children. It's just a matter of needing some help along the way to be able to successfully parent and maintain that safe, loving household home. So I love what you're doing, and I love your heart there and how you're building bridges. I love that. I love that term. So along the journey here, you founded Foster Love Project. How did that come about?
So our experience of just having multiple children come into our home, we had a newborn and toddler that joined us with 45 minutes notice. And so, you know, adding two children to your home in less than an hour's notice is really, really challenging. But really what stood out to me the most is just these kids' faces when they're in your home for the first time. And it's a really fearful thing for them. Even if it was determined that they couldn't stay in the home they were in, it was their normal. It was what they knew. It was what their familiar was. And so there's just so much uncertainty when they're just put in a stranger's home. I mean, that's really a scary thing. And so, you know, our kids didn't really come with anything. And so that scramble of just, you need a clean outfit and we need to make sure we have the bedding for you and all of these things. And so I created a bag drive where I was going to ask people in our community to pack a bag of new belongings, and we would distribute them to our local agencies. And so caseworkers, when they placed a child in a new home, they could take this bag of belongings with them. And so the bags contain an outfit, a blanket, a stuffed animal for the smaller ones, a toothbrush, soap, a pack of socks, and a book. So some very practical items. You know, you need those extra toothbrushes, but then just some comfort items too, whether it's a stuffed animal or blanket or a new book to read. And so just to help the kids in their transition to a new place and then help the foster families with some of those practical needs as well. And so I had, I think, four kids under five when I did this first drive. And so I wasn't really looking for something extra to do, but I knew this was a need and I felt like it could help fill some gaps in the way foster care was operating in our city. And so I wanted to collect 300 bags, and we had 1,300 donated that first year. Wow. And so that was really overwhelming and awesome to see our community respond to this need. A lot of it was just creating awareness that most people don't really know much about foster care, what the process is. And so a lot of people said, you know, I can't foster or adopt, but I will for sure pack a bag of these belongings for the kids. And so we started to do that annually, and it just continued to grow. We've distributed more than 12,000 of, we call them transition bags, now throughout our state and a couple other states around Pennsylvania as well. And so then foster parents were reaching out to me through our social media pages and saying, you know, could you help with a stroller, or could you help with clothing or diapers? And then people were also giving me donations to pass on to foster families. And so we came to a time where our basement was not working anymore, and we really needed that space. And so a church in our area reached out to me and said, hey, we have a space that we can let you use for a very low cost rent. And, you know, at the time I wasn't looking for any funding. I wasn't planning for this to be a business or an organization or anything, but I knew that we were filling a need that was far reaching in our region. And so it just felt like God kept opening doors. And so we just kept walking through them. And so we, in 2016, we became an official 501c3. And then in 2017 is when we opened our shopping center. So our shopping center now, kids in foster care or kinship families can come and shop and get a week's worth of clothing, toiletries, bedding, luggage, toys, books, diapers, formula. We have a really wide range of items, anything they may have had to leave behind in a previous home. And we've had more than 2,000 kids come through and shop in our center, and it's been very well received. We have families that drive from an hour to 2 hours away, even, because this isn't a typical resource that's often offered in cities. And so it's been really amazing just to see how our community has responded to supporting it, which has been so vital. And then to see our foster families just welcome this as a resource. And then just to see the joy on the kids' faces when they can come in, and many of them come in very unsure of what they're walking into, especially our teens. You know, they do not want to be somewhere where they're going to, where they think maybe I'm going to receive pity or handouts or, you know, anything like that. And so our mission from the beginning has been love and dignity for the kids in foster care. And so kids come in themselves so they can pick out the clothes that they want to wear, or the toys that they want to play with, the books they want to read. And we make sure that they are treated with dignity and love for each moment they're at our center. And so it's been a joy, and our programming just continues to expand. We hold an annual family retreat for foster and adoptive families, and back to school events, other family events. We're starting a teen mentoring program for kids who have experienced foster care and adoption, which is just going to be a place for them to process the challenges that they experience, and then just to build friendships with other teens who have been in similar life circumstances. And so we're really excited to launch that program.
Wow. So God flings the door wide open, and you just step through in obedience, not looking for something else to do. Like you said, you had four kiddos there. And that's, you know, that's my very similar experience as well. I did want to talk about the bags again a little bit, because you said your organization has provided over 12,000 bags filled with those personal items. So what kind of bag? Is it a duffel bag? Because I just want our listeners, if they're not familiar with foster care, to understand children are removed from their homes suddenly. It's a very traumatic, sudden incidence, you know, typically. And so a lot of times, just if they're able to grab anything, it's put in a garbage bag or a plastic shopping bag. So they come to the foster parent with essentially nothing, but you're providing some dignity. You're providing this bag that the caseworker can give to the child, right? So
yes.
What kind of bags?
So we have three separate lists so that we can cater to the kids' needs. So we have an infant bag. So that would be a zippered diaper bag, which, you know, the zippered backpack diaper bags are really popular right now. So that's what most people choose, which is really helpful. And then for our kids ages 2 to 12, it's either a large backpack or a duffel bag. And then for our teens, it's a duffel bag. And so we require that the bags are able to be zipped closed because they do often get transported several times. We always want to make sure the contents can stay in. And then we build out the list according to the ages. So those our next bag drive happens around the holidays. So we'll be opening that bag drive November 15th. And all the information about our bags is also on our website, which is fosterloveproject.org. And, so like our infant bags will include a pack of onesies and footed pajamas. And then our teen bags will include things like deodorant and face wash. So making sure that what we're packing in each bag is most helpful for the age of the child that's going to receive it.
I love that. And over 12,000 bags. I mean, that is definitely a need that you're filling. I know through our care portal program here in the Capital Region in New York, we've had child welfare reach out to us and say, "Hey, they were looking for bags. They weren't asking for anything to be in the bags. They were just asking for little suitcases or backpacks, mm-hmm. duffel bags, because that's just it. These kids come in and they don't have anything."
Yeah.
We're able to ask local churches, but I love your idea of actually you have a whole system on how you do that and specifically what goes into them and what kind of bags. And I just love what your organization is doing. And then I want our listeners to know that they can learn more by checking out. Can you give us the website again?
Yes, it's fosterloveproject.org. And then we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under Foster Love Project.
Foster Love.
Yeah. So it's a great way to keep up with what we're doing and ways that we're trying to affect foster care in our region.
I love that. So that we post a link in the show notes and in the corresponding blog post for this episode. So for our listeners to know that you can find that there, but it is fosterloveproject.org. And Kelly, as we wrap up, what is on your heart that you would really like our listeners to hear? What would be their takeaway from our conversation today?
Well, I think what comes to mind is what has most influenced me as a foster adoptive parent, and that is the voice of adult adoptees and former foster youth. This is a voice that has been kind of pushed down for a very long time, and through social media, it's gaining much more traction, and it's such a vital, vital voice. When I first started fostering, I connected with a lot of local foster adoptive moms, and that was great. It was really great to connect with people that were experiencing similar things. But I often started walking away from those meetings, just feeling unrest in my spirit, because there was too often there was oversharing of kids' stories and not keeping them private for their dignity. There was putting down the birth families a lot. And I just was not feeling like that is how we as foster adoptive parents should be interacting with each other. And then even through social media, like joining a lot of groups for foster care and adoption, and like slowly, I just kind of like had to retreat from all of those groups, because it's just so prevalent of, parents putting down these families or oversharing about their kids' needs and those kinds of things. So as I kind of retracted from those, I began to find more and more groups of adoptee voices and to hear their perspective and to hear all the challenges that they have internalized and they had nowhere to process as they were growing up. That changed my perspective in such an amazing way. And that has helped me understand in such a deeper way what my own adopted kids are experiencing and will experience, and to make sure that they always feel the freedom to voice their challenges. You know, many of these adult adoptees have said, "I couldn't tell my adoptive parents that I was struggling with these because they would internalize that and they would feel bad and I didn't want to hurt them." And, that's part of our goal of creating this teen mentorship program, is that they're going to have a space where they can safely process this. And we have a whole team of adult adoptees and former foster youth who are going to be serving as mentors to this program. And so we're so excited that these adults are going to be able to tell these teens that I was there and I have those same emotions and they're normal. And it is okay to grieve that you aren't able to grow in just a single biological family. And it's okay to have hurt over that. It's okay to have confusion about having two families and what that looks like. Or if you don't have any connection with your biological family, that's its own particular grief. And so I really just continue to encourage other foster adoptive families to continually seek out these voices. They are doing amazing work on the behalf of the next generation of foster and adoptive youth, and we can learn so much from them and ultimately help our kids be better prepared as they enter adulthood, and that's my goal. So yeah, those voices have been so impactful to me, and I'm just really grateful for the people that are vulnerable and put these hard feelings out there on the internet, which is a really hard thing to do. But we're learning so much from them.
Yeah, and those are some of the most valuable voices, adoptees and former foster youth. I know back in May for foster care month, I had the privilege of interviewing a woman who she grew up, she came into foster care. I think she was maybe the age of 9, you know, and she shared her story, bounced around from home to home and split up from her siblings. And then, some of them got adopted. She did not get adopted. But she, you know, she shared some important perspectives. And one of those was how vital it was to have caring adults in her life, from school teachers and caseworkers. She was able to have those role models and those mentors. And she did graduate from high school, and she went on to college, and she graduated from college. She became a social worker. She married a pastor. So she and her husband are pastoring a church in the Capital Region here. And she works with, she works with youth, you know, in the foster care system. So she was just such a shining light, but to have that perspective of this is what it feels like, you know, and like you said, those are the most valuable voices in this. We can learn so much. So Kelly, thank you. I love what you're doing over there in Pennsylvania. Down there. I think you're down there.
Yeah.
You know, fosterloveproject.org. Love what you guys are doing and your heart, your story. I pray that you just take in, collect, you know, just that that so many bags will come in this season. You know, that it'll bless your sock off, so to speak. That would be just a successful drive, and that you just continue to have that amazing impact in the lives of children and families right there in Pennsylvania. So thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks, Sandra, so much. I appreciate the opportunity to share about our work and how we can better help support kids and families who are a part of foster care. It's so important.
Yeah, thank you. So again, you can learn more about Kelly's nonprofit at fosterloveproject.org. Check it out and maybe even be inspired by what they're doing with those bags, and maybe your church would be interested in collecting bags, duffel bags, diaper bags. You know, I know local foster care agencies can always use those kinds of things, whether they're filled with items or not. I love Kelly's idea of putting in the blanket, some essentials. You know, if it's a diaper bag, some diapers and onesies, and for the older kids, it would be that stuffed animal, socks, things like that. So I love that. A book, you know, so I love all of that. Just so many great ideas that people can really jump on, get involved with, and really impact the life of a child. So pray about what God would have you do with something like that. And thank you for being with us today for episode 242 of Orphans No More. We're excited to have you be part of our team, and pray about how the Lord would have you be involved in caring for kids in crisis. If you were inspired by today's show, I hope you were. I know I was. Makes me want to go out and start collecting bags, actually. Subscribe. Leave a review, and please share it with your friends and on your social media. We really appreciate that's how people learn about our show. When you're sharing it, especially on your social media, it sends out that message right to the algorithm and all that, you know, social media, internet world, that this is important and people are talking about it, and then it gets out there more and more people will know. So we just really appreciate your help with that. And of course, let us know you're listening. We'd love to hear from you. You can contact us at justicefororphansny.org. Email me directly. I love hearing from listeners. Sandra Flack, JFO @gmail.com. And again, we're on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. Check out our website and our social media to learn more about Justice for Orphans. And I know I sound like a broken record, but stay tuned to this podcast and our social media for news about the release of my book, Orphans No More, A Journey Back to the Father. When I went away a few weeks ago, I had a respite weekend after coming off of a crazy fundraising season and the kids going back to school, sort of how all that worked out. And I managed to, by myself, my husband is amazing. He recognized, you know, this wife needs respite and let me go. And I spent a weekend completely by myself with the Lord and my book. And I was able to revise a full 4 chapters. And my writing coach thinks that we could be done with it by the end of October with the revisions. So we're getting so close, and I would appreciate prayer. If you think of me, if you listen to this podcast, just, you know, shoot up a prayer that I'm able to finish. I want to be finished, but I want to finish with excellence, finish strong, and give God the glory for that. So thank you again for listening, and I look forward with being with you next time on Orphans No More.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.